Noah, Polyphonic, you actually spent the last couple of days in a cabin for celebrating the holiday. Every time I think I've never been in a cabin in my life. Are they really like log made of wood? What kind of cabin are we talking?
Well, this wasn't even really a log
'Cause I think
cabin.
of horror movies all the time when I'm to your cabin.
No, this is just like this one was actually just like a nice little kind of like loft apartment in a small seaside town. Or not really apartment, like it was its own building, but yeah,
So not a cabin
cottages.
at all. In every sense of the word, not a cabin.
I don't know, but like cabins and cottages and stuff like that are more of a mindset than they are a physical thing. Have you seriously never been to a
That's fair.
cottage?
I've never been to a cottage in my life. In fact, the only thing that comes to mind when I think of cottage is
Is
Shrek
cheese.
and Lord of the Rings.
Oh, I think
Oh
of
my
cheese.
God. You
Cheese.
guys you live in a different world. I'm in Canada, and cottage country is huge in Canada because it's
I'm
real
in
cold
Manhattan,
in the winter.
where the
So
closest
we
thing you get to a
flee.
cottage is like a 3-story building. So that's
Yeah,
about as
no.
close as we're gonna get. Jordan lives near a mountain. Do you have any cottages, Jordan?
No, but we got a lot of trees.
I don't have any of those either. So you guys are, I think you guys are living a different life than I am. Was it? How many people went out there with you?
It was just me and my wife. Just went out, rented the place for a week, and mostly just, hung out, drank beers. They had a hot tub that we could use, which was sweet. Yeah, it's a pretty chill thing.
Sounds like the Hamptons, but for Canada, basically. That's exactly what it
Yeah.
sounds like. It sounds like
Yeah, I
leaving
guess
Manhattan
so.
to go to the Hamptons.
Yeah, but instead of like fancy big houses, there's just like janky, kind of quaint small houses.
Exactly what I'm looking for on my Airbnbs. I type in janky small house
Yeah,
and see what
exactly.
comes up. I
That's
love it. Anyways, welcome to Film Panic, where I think what we do here is review janky small houses and let you know where we think you should stay. But in all seriousness, this is a competitive movie podcast where each week we debate something sometimes ridiculous, sometimes very analytical, sometimes in between about film. For those of you who don't know, because we've been doing a horrible job of this, first off, follow the Film Panic Twitter if you're here. It's film underscore panic, I think. I'm pretty sure that's right. If you type it in, you can find out. I'm pretty sure it's that. That'll help us figure out what you guys want to hear us talk about. Also, shout out to the patrons. You can find all the full episodes of Film Panic 2 weeks early, and you get exclusive voting rights. If you are a member of the Nerdstalgic Patreon, you can go over there, get access to the episodes early, get the right to vote for a winner. For those of you who don't know how this works, one of us is going to win today, me
It's
or
going to be me.
Noah
I will
Polyphonic.
definitely not win.
Jordan will win.
Unless things get really weird.
Unless things get really weird. But yeah, that's basically how this works. We debate on Patreon. You guys pick a winner. If you're listening to this on Google or Apple Podcast or whatever the hell other podcasting services there are, it's too many. You can find these episodes earlier. You're still going to get them. You're just going to get them 2 weeks late on Patreon. Some of the patrons are picking the episodes at this point of what we talk about. But today, it's me, Nerdstalgic, Tyler. You could find me on YouTube as Nostalgic, obviously, versus Polyphonic or Noah. Tell us what you do, man. What do you do on YouTube?
Well, I do video essays about music. I guess is just the easy. Anyone who knows your stuff, it's basically the exact same as that, but about music. I do all kinds of
That's a good
music.
description.
I kind of got my start doing a lot of classic rock, which I still do sometimes. But nowadays, I'm a lot more interested in. I do a lot of jazz stuff, funk and soul, really all over the map, though. Any music that's good, I like analyzing, and I always try to do really weird creative visuals. That's also kind of very.
A staple of Polyphonic.
Yeah. Every video looks different, is the goal. And some of
Good.
them
I
hold
like
up and
that.
some of them don't, but
Oh well, you can't win them all.
that's the nature of creating things on a weekly turnaround schedule.
So for those of you that are new here, this last time I think we're going to do this because at this point almost the entire cast of Film Panic has been introduced. But the way this works is we are going to start with kind of these opening statements where we just kind of talk about what we're doing today, and then we'll hit main arguments, which are 10 minutes apiece. Jordan will keep time. Jordan will lead us through everything. Each of us get a counter period, and then we'll close with panic time, which basically just means 2 minutes uninterrupted, no counters. It's your last final put the gavel down moment, and basically the mic drop moment. And yeah, then you guys are going to get to decide who wins. Today we're doing something that we thought would be nice to fold Polyphonic in with, to fold Noah in with, is we're gonna create our own music biopic. So basically we're going to cast, we're going to choose the talent for and the story of whatever this music biopic we think should be made is. And whoever has the best movie, the person that you think pitched the best movie idea, that's a better way to put it. We're pitching our own music biopic. Whoever had the best pitch, you guys are going to vote for, and that's who's going to win. Yeah, Jordan, you want to lead us into openings?
Sure. All right. So how the opening works is we have 10 minutes on the clock. I'm going to let you know every so often how much time you have left just to put the pressure on. And in these 10 minutes, you'll be going first, Noah. You'll be pitching your film. And Tyler,
wait,
at the
wait,
same
before,
time.
Before we get to me, I'm sorry. Before we get to mains, I wanna have a conversation really quickly that I think no one wants to have too. Can we talk about who we didn't pick and what we didn't pick?
Oh my god!
Really quickly.
Yeah, totally.
I went through a lot of options in my head before I landed on what I landed on. Many of them were stupid, and some other ones were not quite as bad. But like I thought about everything. I thought about going like way back and doing like a really strange period piece about kind of a like what it would be like to look at someone like Mozart or like Bach, but kind of amp it up Marie Antoinette, Sofia Coppola style. I also thought about doing things that were a bit weirder, like looking at the Black Eyed Peas. I just thought it's such a weird, and there's a woman in the Black Eyed Peas that was the original lead.
Yeah.
I thought about telling her story. There was this woman that was not Fergie, and she was the original lead of Black Eyed Peas, and she's real upset about it today. Like, does not let it go.
There's a great like mini documentary on her on YouTube by the New York Times.
And I thought about telling that story, which I think is really interesting. And I also thought about, and this is a weird one, me and Jordan stumbled upon this yesterday. I thought about telling the story of the botched kidnapping of Frank Sinatra's son.
Oh my god.
Which is less of a, it's technically not really a biopic, but it's so stupid. Like, these people kidnap Frank Sinatra's son. Frank Sinatra was like, I'll give you $1 million. They countered back with $240,000. Like, that was their counter, a lower, dramatically lower number. They went back into the hotel room after kidnapping him and then left the gun there for some reason. Like, there was so much that went wrong here. It's just, it would have been a really weird, subversive comedy.
Dark
comedy.
Film is called Ain't That a Kick.
Ain't That a Kick or Frankly Dangerous.
Either way.
I don't know which one.
Frankly
Anyways,
Dangerous.
What did you almost pick, Noah?
Yeah. So I bounced around on a lot. My immediate thing that I went to was Bob Marley, just because I thought Bob Marley, and I thought Lakeith Stanfield would play a great Bob Marley.
He's dope.
Yeah. But then I looked, and there's one in the works, and I wanted something a little less kind of like big and typical.
Obvious.
Yeah, exactly. It seemed like a pretty obvious answer. I really liked the idea of doing this one. This one I almost picked, but then I was like,
Miley Cyrus.
Feel like it's basically just cheating. No, Kendrick Lamar, and just adapting Good Kid, Mad City into a movie. You could shoot it non-linear, do all of that.
I feel like his story is so central to popular culture right now.
Yeah.
Though, that like, I don't know if that story even needs to be told. You know? What
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Well. This is the thing. Like, like it's a very like archetypal story it's very interesting and compelling, and Kendrick tells it in a really good way, but yeah, it's a story that we've seen. I thought it could be really cool to do one that was kind of like magical realism, a magical realism biopic on Robert Johnson.
Like Rocketman magical realism, or even more visually subversive,
like a little less than Rocketman, actually. Kind of like Beasts of the Southern Wild magical realism or something like that, where talking about the story of Robert Johnson selling his soul to the devil, and kind of kind of mingling that myth together with history. And then the other big one that I thought would be fun, but I decided I couldn't kind of figure out who to center it around, was I thought it would be really cool to have a movie called Nazi Punks Fuck Off, Am I allowed to swear?
That would have. Yeah, you're fine. That would have been a movie, though.
Yeah, yeah. About how like skinhead punks went to war with the hardcore scenes, especially in the Bay Area and DC in the 80s, and kind of about.
Can we
that
point
experience.
Out Noah said it? Noah said the like two words that are like as explicit as possible in popular culture, and then went afterwards. Can I swear? Like at that point, you've crossed the most harsh line possible, so you better hope so. Anyways,
it's a good thing I
can
swear.
By the way, you can. By the way, Jordan, lead us into mains. I'm excited for Noah.
I do want to say some other good options of biopics. We could,
tell me the behind recording the scenes, this, Zac Efron, Vanessa Hudgens story when they were filming High School Musical.
That would be great. But Charlie Daniels passed away today. Recording this.
He did.
So rest in peace to Charlie Daniels. But they could do a pseudo like story based off of The Devil Went Down to Georgia and his character, and call it Daniel versus the Devil. That'd be pretty cool. Or we can do Amadeus 2.
All right. lead us in the main story.
All right, so 10 minutes on the clock. You're going to present your movie, you're going to pitch it, and Tyler can interject, and then afterwards we're going to have 5 minutes of, you know, back and forth questioning about it. So throughout these 10 minutes, I'm going to let you know how much longer you have every so often, just to put the pressure on, and you can start whenever you're ready, and I'll let you know when the 10 minutes is up.
All right. So, the movie that I pitched is about a jazz dancer named Josephine Baker. So, Baker was she was born in America, but she was huge in Europe in the 1920s at kind of the peak of the jazz age. She was very famous for dancing in a skirt made of bananas. She's been called the Beyoncé of her time.
She kind of looks like Beyonce just a tiny bit.
Yeah. She's got the air to her. So she's this incredible jazz singer, dancer, really influential at the kind of height of the jazz age in Paris in the 20s. And she eventually actually moved to Paris, renounced her American roots, and then this is where the story kind of gets really interesting and cool. Is she was in Paris during World War II as the Nazis were coming to power. So what happened was when France declared war on the Nazis, they recruited Josephine Baker to be a spy. So she worked with the French espionage. She would go to parties with high-ranking ministers. She talked to Italian bureaucrats, Japanese officials. She regularly attended parties at the Italian embassy and just kind of like rubbed shoulders with these important people. But then, of course, France fell. And when France fell, Josephine Baker became a key member in the French resistance. And that's because her career as a musician kind of allowed her to tour Europe. So she went around to Europe, especially a lot of parts of Spain, and she would sneak messages to Allied forces. Often she would sneak the letters. She would put the letters in her underwear when she was sneaking past border checkpoints and stuff like that. So she was this incredible jazz singer who turned into...
You want to tell the story of that part of her life. So this is going to be a less music focused biopic.
Yes. Well, it's still going to be tied to music because she was performing during all of this, and she also performed for troops and stuff like that. But yeah.
But I think we can agree her music would not be.
Yeah.
I think in terms of popular culture, like now, I don't think her music would be enough to be the foundation or the rock of the movie.
Yeah. No.
Right?
No. Absolutely. She doesn't have those kinds of like songs that you know, but she does have dance things. She was one of the first to popularize the Charleston, which is something that people still kind of know today, and a lot of the flapper aesthetics are kind of like based on Josephine Baker. But yeah, this story is gonna be talking about her spy work, and then there's stuff later in her career that we're not even gonna have time to get to in my movie, where she eventually kind of like returned to the States, and would kind of split her time between the States and Paris. but became an active member of the civil rights movement and was so active, in fact, that Martin Luther King's widow asked her to take over leadership of the civil rights movement after King was assassinated.
I wonder if that wouldn't be more interesting of a film, having this very weathered kind of, at that time she was older, right? Woman, kind of being this very central, but very worldly and very, I think, kind of knowledged woman at that point. It would be so much, I think right now, more poignant to have that part of her. But I understand where you're coming from. Because you can't, a jazz dancer and singer that turns into a French spy is a badass idea.
So you were talking about poignant, and that's actually kind of specifically why I think I framed this movie in a way that I think can also be really relevant in the modern time. Because one of the big things about Josephine Baker is that she tried to make it in the States and couldn't because of racism. But when she moved and when she was working, when she was a superstar in Europe, she was watching the rise of fascism in Europe, and it reminded her of the racism she knew back home in America.
But can you ground that racism? Because if, okay, let's say the movie's going to focus on her time as a spy, right? During the war and everything that's happening. Are you going to have time? Will it make sense to kind of place her earlier in America experiencing that racism?
So
and
here's,
have the time?
5 minutes left.
Here's how we're going to do that.
Don't detach the rest of the film from that.
Yeah, here's how we're going to do that. We're going to get a lot of that in the first act. The first act, we're going to drop into the jazz age in Paris.
Okay, cool.
And what's going to happen, yes, is as Josephine is living in Paris and seeing the rise of fascism, she's going to have flashbacks to her youth. She was born in St. Louis, adopted and raised in Little Rock. So very kind of like racially charged areas in the States. So we're going to get flashbacks to her youth that parallel the rise of fascism and that kind of
hatred.
You have
to make sure that you, when you do a flashback like that, when you're entering an entirely different environment, you have to make sure you do not detach that moment from the moment she's presently in, right? Because then it starts to feel like two movies.
Exactly. So you're gonna see parallels, whether it's in like her seeing anti-Semitic propaganda and it reminding her of anti-black propaganda, various things like that. You can kind of have these links between a society approaching the verge of fascism and America at the time, where fascism also was pretty in vogue and almost took over. And then what's going to happen is the second act is going to begin with Germany invading Poland and France declaring war. The second act is going to be a lot of Josephine, you know, mingling, rubbing elbows with spies, very kind of cool.
So let me ask you a question. So how, because there's a very grand scope being articulated right now, which is excellent. But how much information can you give to Josephine Baker, the character, right, that really puts into perspective what's happening in the war? Right, because she's a tool at the time, right?
I think you can have liaisons with that.
I guess the question is: is what's happening around her going to end up being messy, or are you going to have to split so much of the focus on what's happening in her?
I think we're not going to see a ton of the broader war. I think it's more going to see her on a personal level with the understanding that the war is in the backdrop. And what you're going to see is you're going to see her using the skills that she's acquired as a performer to help the cause of war. But you're also going to see how kind of defeated and crestfallen she is when she's doing everything she can and France still falls. But in that moment, we kind of enter our third act where she begins traveling And she's using, she realizes she can kind of use her music not only to deliver messages, but also she performed for troops, especially in France. They didn't have any kind of like formal entertainment corps. So she became that. She would not charge admission. She would just perform for troops for morale for free. And you can right. see her coming into her own as a leader because of that. And then that will bring us around to the end of her arc, where she had tried so hard to have a career in the States, but had trouble because of racism. And you're going to see that in her flashbacks. And then it's going to come around full circle, because after the war ended, she got the Croix de Guerre, which is a French war medal, and became somewhat celebrated. So she returned home and started performing at these massive performances in the U.S., including a parade of 100,000 people in
Harlem.
That's
where I'm worried. That's where I'm worried the story falls apart.
Final minute?
That's where I'm worried. I'll wait for my counter. Who's directing this movie, Noah?
Okay, so this movie is directed by someone who both knows how to do cabaret performances and knows how to do intense war thrillers, and that is Sam Mendes. Sam Mendes adapted he adapted Cabaret for the screen, so clearly he's interested in that. And then he's also done the James Bond. Skyfall is possibly the best Bond movie.
Just 1917.
It's got that intrigue, exactly, in 1917. Yep. And Josephine Baker, also I forgot to mention in all of this, she was also bisexual. So we're going to cast Josephine Baker as another multi-talented bisexual black woman by the name of Janelle Monáe. It is the perfect, perfect role for Janelle Monáe. She's a performer. She loves music. She's got the same body type. So Janelle Monáe playing Josephine Baker, the spy in World War II, directed by Sam Mendes. Okay.
You can go over. You can go over now.
Okay.
You can go over on this.
And
one.
And the last thing I'm going to say is the name of the movie.
Give it to me.
So she has this this song called My Two Loves, and her two loves in the song, it says it in French, but the song says My Two Loves Are My Country and Paris. So the name of this movie is going to be My Country and Paris. And that also sets up what you've got going along, where you've got these kind of two streams where you're following what's happening in America and comparing it to what's happening in Paris. And that kind of wraps a neat little thematic bow around the whole thing.
Good. Introduce counters, Jordan. I'm so ready.
All right. So that was a very good pitch right there. A lot of interesting ideas. Now we have 5 minutes here on the clock, which gives a chance for Tyler to kind of combat a lot of this stuff, discuss it back and forth before we move on to Tyler's pitch. So whenever you're ready, take it away.
I'm ready. Certain things, I'm ready for this. Certain things just feel either unadaptable, and I don't think anything's entirely unadaptable, but are so hard. What you've pitched here, Noah, is a very difficult movie to make. I want to talk about something real quick. I want to talk about my biggest concern with the movie you just pitched is how you end that movie. It's two things. You stated that you wanted Josephine to feel that we should feel that she's crestfallen when she's done so much for France and it falls, but you're talking about a story that you've placed her in America through the flashbacks. You send her back to America at the end of the movie. France seems like a second choice for her. It seems like a place to escape, not a place that she feels at home in, right? So how do you, I mean, if you're going to end it with her going back to America, then the question is, well, okay, did she really give a shit about France in the first place?
Well, I think you can clearly show her patriotism and love for France by the fact that she's willing to put her life on the line and fight Nazis for the liberation of France. And I think there's a lot of that. And I think that
sure, but how do you ground that, right? Like, how do you make sure it doesn't seem like, all right, well, she's here. Right, like, let me give you a parallel.
I think you can have her walking through. You can have her singing to French resistance fighters, and then sharing drinks with them and mingling. I mean, you could even make this a bilingual movie if you wanted to make the scope even larger.
You're making this difficult. Yeah. You're making this movie even more difficult.
Yeah, but I
also want to say this. I think that another problem I have with your pitch is that I think that flashbacks, especially in a movie that it sounds like you want to feel so personal and it sounds like you want it to feel so grounded in her story, when you start flashing back, even if you're making parallels, first off, if they're too parallel, you're going to get this kind of sententious feeling, this feeling that you're being preached at. Like, look, racism is like fascism. I don't actually disagree, but it's just you want to make sure that the story is about her as much as it's about fascism or racism or anything else, right? And when you start to do flashbacks, especially to different countries and different places, it's hard not to wonder sometimes, like, all right, well, why are we not just getting this American story? Why are we not getting this kind of coming-of-age story of Josephine Baker and America dealing with racism that's censored to France?
I think one of the big things that's important to note is part of the whole success in France and part of the liberation of France in the Jazz Age is this kind of racial equality.
Obviously, it's not equality. But I think stylistically. I mean, when you're utilizing a tool like flashbacks, it's so easy to detach yourself from the moment when you're intentionally taking the audience out of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think there are very clear things that you can do also, though, with flashbacks to show the difference between Paris and America. Like, for example, when Josephine Baker started in America, she had to perform in blackface. So if you have her performing in France to a cheering audience, and then you cut back to her performing in blackface to a bunch of...
That brings me to my primary concern with this pitch and my primary counter is there are movies that try to tackle way too much, right?
Yeah.
Way too much thematically, and it bogs down the film. It starts to feel like you're throwing out buzzwords and political tangents without actually exploring them meaningfully. I think what Josephine Baker represents is incredible. I think she represents somebody that overcame or at least stood for kind of a voice against racism and oppression, which is incredible. I think it's also incredible that we even know that she was bisexual. I think the fact that she was able to be that person is remarkable, especially at a time where, again, this was not a time where that was necessarily socially acceptable. And she's and then you start throwing all right, now we're talking about blackface, and now we're talking about and it's like, okay, at what point are we going to focus on one of these elements of her personality or elements of her experience, right? Or are we just going to skim past them all?
I think what you're missing is, I think the fact that all of this systemic racism around her
shapes
is
her.
integral to who she is as a
Ten
person.
Seconds.
But
the question is, at what point do you say, okay, this is the primary piece of her that I think is shaping these actions? Or better yet, screw that. Look at it differently, right? If I'm going to say, okay, I want this movie to... What do I want this movie to represent? What am I trying to say, right? If I'm trying to say, be okay with your sexuality, which is an amazing message, great. I'm also trying to say racism is bad. I'm also trying to say blackface is bad. I'm also trying to say fascism is bad. And at what point am I going to explore these things enough to convince you that that's true, right? At what point do I say, okay... You know, it's not even the question of, are you throwing too much at the movie? The question is, what's being asked here is Herculean task. It's a Herculean task to be able to never exploit any of those things. That's a real problem with biopics half the time, right? Like Bohemian Rhapsody, for example, it feels like it uses AIDS and the entire AIDS epidemic and movement as a tool to kind of emotionally reconnect these people. It feels off because we don't explore Freddie's sexual behavior at all or any of that. So it feels weird. And it's just, this is such a great story, this Josephine Baker story. And I think what her personality and her character represents is so important that I'd be so worried of fucking up one of those things. You know what I mean?
Well, that's why Sam Mendes is doing it. He's way better than me. But what I'll say to that is, I do think it is ambitious. But
very.
in my mind, if you're not gonna make a movie because it's ambitious, if your knock on a movie is it's ambitious, why do you even make movies?
That's but the problem. True, but the other side of that coin is sometimes people aren't equipped for that ambition, right? Sam Mendes the right guy to tell the story of this black woman in France who's bisexual?
I mean, I don't know if Sam Mendes is 100% the best person. I have all kinds of room to change on that and right. budge on that. And I would especially right. want it to be written by a black writer's room and a queer writer's room. And if we could find a director who's a woman of color that is willing to take it on, that's fantastic too. I mostly just said Sam Mendes because I think stylistically,
oh, I think it's a great choice.
He has a lot of the things you can do. But I would also say when you're talking about the scope, I think those are things that are in a lot of biopics. And I think a lot of them are able to pull. You look at The Imitation Game. The Imitation Game wasn't like the greatest movie ever, but it was a very good movie, and it managed to do exactly what this is doing, which is explore one side of a human being personally, kind of tell this personal story on this broader political backdrop of everything that's going on. I think that's something that, a really great biopic, The Social Network, was able to do, is it is able to get into the mind of Mark Zuckerberg, but use him as a symbol for a lot of the issues with tech that we have come to know and understand today. And I think in that kind of vein. Yeah.
Not mean to cut it off. I'm sorry, but we went over time.
Yeah.
On that one.
That was a big counter. That was almost as long as the mains.
Yeah.
we had some stuff to say. We'll save it for the opposite side.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so, before we even call mains, I just want to say I took a very different approach. I think Noah's movie's dope, and I would definitely watch it, but I took a very different approach. Go ahead, Jordan, lead us.
So, now it's time for Tyler's turn to pitch us what could be something very interesting. So let's go ahead and get into it. You have 10 minutes whenever you're ready to start. And
I'm good. I'm so excited by the idea I have that it's actually kind of consumed me a little bit. I think so much a movie I would want to see. I'm gonna do this in kind of a reverse order that Noah just did. So my biopic is gonna be about NSYNC. And there are very specific. First off, the title of the movie is incredible. It's called Bye Bye Bye. I also flipped back and forth with Dirty Pop, but I went with Bye Bye Bye.
Yeah, no, Bye 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 is the title. You're completely right on that. I'm going to grant you that.
Yep, it's amazing. And as a director, when I was going through all the options, I'm so over the music biopic as it exists today. I think it is tired. I think it is cliched. I think it's become formulaic. I think we're becoming so inundated with this kind of let's go through every beat of their lives and every beat of the story and get to their comeback in the case of Rocket Man or get to Freddie's final performance or the right when he announced that he had AIDS and blah, blah, blah. And just it just feels like we're being told the same story but just slotting in different people and changing the script a little bit, and the foundation remains the same, and it's becoming tedious. It's becoming so tedious, in fact, that as much as I love A Star Is Born, which is not a biopic, it almost feels like one because we've been told this story as a biopic so much at this point. And I think some of these biopics are getting credit where it's not deserved, things like Bohemian Rhapsody, which is honestly an average movie. And so I wanted to do something totally different. I don't want to do the structure of biopics as they exist now. So I really love Richard Linklater, who is going to write my movie. He's going to write Bye Bye Bye. Richard Linklater is someone who's known for things like Boyhood, but most importantly, he's known for Dazed and Confused, and he's known for School of Rock. And finally, he's known for Everybody Wants Some. Now, two of those movies, Dazed and Confused and Everybody Wants Some, are these kind of hangout, slice-of-life, coming-of-age movies where we just kind of
see
these characters
interact. Can I just interject and say that if you're doing Richard Linklater, I actually want an NSYNC movie in the mold of a Scanner Darkly.
Yeah, there we go. It's amazing.
A psychological thriller.
Dazed and Confused and Everybody Wants Some of these movies where there is not really any conflict. It's not necessarily about that. It's not about plot or narrative. It's about conversation. It's about growth. It's about moments in time, capturing a spirit, capturing the essence of something. And Everybody Wants Some, it's college in the 70s in Dazed and Confused. It's actually relatively similar, except for high school. We've seen him deal with music before in School of Rock. But I also want Adam McKay directing this movie. Adam McKay is the director of Anchorman, The Big Short, and Vice. Now, there's an important reason for this. First off, Adam McKay understands how to take, and he changed the biopic in big ways, with The Big Short in particular, which has been a big influence for a lot of other movies, especially political dramas like Bombshell, for example. That movie takes a very serious and at times tragic subject, and it finds a way to make it exciting, fast-paced, and most importantly, humorous, stylized. And he did the same thing with Vice in an incredible way. He told stories that you wouldn't think of as these fun, fast-paced, but very grounded experiences as fun or fast-paced. And he's, I think, perfect. He's also the guy that did Anchorman, which is worth pointing out here as I get into what this movie's going to be. And then finally, really importantly, before I get into what I want to do with this movie, I want to talk about the cinematographer. Matthew Libicic, he is incredible. I mean, you've certainly seen a movie he's done if you're listening to this. He did Protozoa for Darren Aronofsky, which is probably not a great example, but Requiem for a Dream. He did Iron Man with Jon Favreau. He did Black Swan, Iron Man 2. He did Noah. He did Chirac for Spike Lee.
6 minutes left.
He did Venom. He did Mother. He did A Star Is Born, and that's where I want to hit it. A Star Is Born has a sequence that tops off the first act where the two main characters get on stage and sing for the first time, and it is so goosebump-inducing, and it is the reason, I guarantee you, that scene and the last scene are the reason that it even got Oscar attention. It's incredible. He understands how to film personalities, but personalities in the midst of performance. And so let me tell you what this movie is really quickly. First off, Justin Timberlake is played by Timothy Chalamet, who is super perfect because he's right now he's the it boy of Hollywood, but he looks like Justin Timberlake and he could pull it off perfectly, and he's got the same body type. But he's also an incredible actor.
Can he dance?
Yes, he can.
Okay, he can
dance.
That's good.
He went to LaGuardia High School in New York, where he had a rap alter ego and performed music on stage multiple times and made music videos for his projects.
Oh my God, I didn't know that.
Yes, exactly. He's perfect for Justin Timberlake. Then there's Lance Bass. We have Ansel Elgort, who did Baby Driver. He also literally is a pop singer and has a solo career. Mr. Chazez, we have Austin Butler, who, again, musically inclined, is actually playing Elvis in an upcoming biopic and has dyed his hair brown, has the looks to be Chazez. For Joey, I picked Dylan Minnette, who is, Clay Jensen from 13 Reasons Why and Perks of Being a Wallflower, is also a musician, has his own band. And then for Chris Kirkpatrick, I picked Logan Lerman because I like Logan Lerman and I would love to cast him. Now, this movie is going to be in the same vein as Dazed and Confused. It's going to be in the same vein as Everybody Wants Some. I don't think there's enough appreciation for the fact. A lot of people believe that our generation, I'm 26. I think, Noah, you're 26.
Yeah.
Jordan, you're 25. I think our generation, there's not enough respect. There's this idea that there was no culture. We had no culture growing up. There was no good music and none of these. We were a cultureless generation that ended up growing up into iPhones and the internet. And we lost all idea of what, music and film and all these other things were. And it's not true. And there's this angst, I think, in a lot of people. We want to be nostalgic for these things, but there's so little respect for this era. And I think the boy band era is so unique because no one touches it. But NSYNC was perfect because there is a lot of angst right now. There's a lot of anger online and with the younger generations. And that's exactly what NSYNC represented for boy bands. The reason they were different than Backstreet Boys or 98 Degrees is because, and you've heard critics at Rolling Stone, New York Times, they've all said it, they had this bite, this grit, this angst about them. And it fits perfectly kind of for the voice of kind of internet anger. But I want to spend 3 days with these people.
3 minutes.
And those 3 days are 2 days before, the day before, and the day of the 2000s VMA performance. The movie will end on that 2000s VMA performance, which if you haven't seen it, go watch it, please. It's actually incredible. It's so creative and so unique and so interesting, and it's a perfect microcosmic encapsulation of that whole era and what NSYNC and Backstreet Boys and 98 Degrees were. But there's a movie here that can be funny, and it can be fast-paced, it can be interesting, but it can also be relaxed and just kind of capturing, for me, it's about NSYNC, obviously, but it's also about capturing that very, very turn of the century, millennium, weird, weird time period, that weird year where it was like everyone was wearing basketball jerseys eight inches too long for them, and hair had frosted tips on it, and music was so electro-infused, and there was this kind of weird technological renaissance of popular culture, and it's such a strange kind of almost like a time capsule of what the internet age was setting up to be. And I think we don't talk about it. No one captures it. And that's what I think a Richard Linklater and an Adam McKay would be so perfect at, is capturing this moment. And that's what it's about. That moment when us three were 7, 8 years old, and there were CD players everywhere and Walkmans, and everybody wanted to be Justin Timberlake. And there was these wars, these word of mouth wars over which boy band was better. And I think if we just take these people for what they are over the course of 3 days, see them interact, feud a little bit, see Justin Timberlake start to separate himself from the rest of these people, which, by the way, is a big deal. See them come into their own with this second album that kind of was them really getting their voices out there after being screwed, by the way, on their first album. And I think most importantly, the soundtrack for this is just, it's time. It's Final time minute. To be nostalgic for boy bands in that kind, that era of music, as weird and as bad as some of it is. And this soundtrack would just slap. And ending it with a recreation, kind of a Bohemian Rhapsody style, this full recreation of that VMA performance, it feels like my childhood. And to not have to kind of go the typical biopic route of telling a whole life story, or better yet, to have this big conflict of drug abuse or any of these. No, these are just kids. They were kids. They were 19 and 20 years old, just trying to live a life that was totally abnormal. And to place ourselves in their shoes for just a couple of days leading up to this huge performance for them. It was huge. It was one of their biggest performances ever. And just kind of have a moment where it's like, let's just kind of figure out what this time was, what this year was, 2001. What was that year? And do it through the lens of people that we recognize, that we have nostalgia for. I think it would be so weird and funny and so just kind of almost relaxing. It would be this very Dazed and Confused, very Everybody Wants Some experience, where it's just, these are normal people at the end of the day that became kind of icons of this era. And so they should and would represent everything that era stood for, personality-wise. And to be able to explore that, I think, would be incredible. And plus, an NSYNC movie is just a great idea. I would love an hour and a half of listening to that music. Anyways, call time, Jordan. That's it. You called it. I'm done. Counter time.
All right. So now, 5 minutes on the clock. Go ahead and dispute or to comment on or Let's throw your it. Opinions on whatever Tyler had to say.
Whatever you got, Noah.
Okay, bring it to me. So basically what you just pitched me is nostalgia porn. And I think we have enough nostalgia porn.
It's not, though.
It's zeitgeist. I think it could not be, but I think it will end
up
being.
It's not. I want to debate that right away. Two things. Number one, there has not been a movement of nostalgia for that kind of boy band era. There's nostalgia for the boy band, but name the last movie that took place in the 2000s surrounded boy bands.
There hasn't been in movies, the last TV show. But in pop culture, in memes.
But you want to talk about, you want to talk about how we define whether or not there's a nostalgia movement. I can list a ton of revivals, TV shows that are surrounding 90s animation, 2000s animation.
I can list a
bunch of reboots.
We're just working our way through that. Nostalgia
exactly.
works on a 25-year cycle. So what?
Exactly.
You're just gonna kick off
you
the
just
next
pitched my
cycle.
Movie for me.
But you're just
you've just pitched
wait,
my movie for me.
So your
just,
goal
that
your
movie,
goal is just kicking off the next vapid cycle of nostalgia porn?
Well, you can't call that. Well, hold on. Let's roll back here. You can't call something that doesn't exist vapid. You can't call something empty. The idea that this movie says nothing is a little absurd. You don't have to have Josephine Baker to make a movie that stands for something is something.
No,
Dazed and Confused.
I think
Dazed and Confused is nostalgia porn. Dazed and Confused is nostalgia porn. Everybody wants some of his nostalgia porn. The Breakfast Club, when we look at it now, we view that as that thing. But you can list all of these movies. That entire genre, you could argue, is nostalgia porn. It's not. Just because something exists in an era where these things are happening doesn't make them nostalgia porn. It's nostalgia porn if it doesn't have any substance.
But I think a lot of those existed. I mean, all of those existed kind of pre-internet when we are soaked with
BuzzFeed
nostalgia.
No, everybody wants them came out a couple years ago.
And I think your pitch, I think your pitch is interesting. But I think that, like, in reality, I don't see how you're gonna get if you're gonna say you
that
can't get my movie
dollars.
Made because of the scope, you can't make an NSYNC biopic that's not just a bunch of
Let's be incredibly honest.
If we have
to pitch two movies to execs, as someone who has been in this position, I assure you, the movie that execs would pick up on is the NSYNC movie over the Josephine Baker movie.
Oh no, no, your movie would get picked up. It would not get made as your movie. Bohemian Rhapsody was picked up as a
raucous tell-all. We picked how it gets made, though. We picked how it gets made. We picked who's making them, who's directing them, and who's writing them.
But I think that there's still, I mean, I think in your perfect world, but the fact of the matter is,
but that's the point like, of this.
But,
that's the point
but
of this
people
argument.
Want,
it is our perfect
but what
world.
People want, what people want out of an NSYNC movie, yes, some people want that, but you're not gonna get wide support for an NSYNC movie that's not just hitting kind of the big beats. How are you gonna work into this? How are you gonna have all of the big musical numbers? Is it just
you're
them
not.
Sitting around rehearsing?
You're not. Just like Josephine Baker will not.
But I think that's the problem. You cannot have that in Josephine Baker because Josephine Baker's musical legacy is not so intense. It's not in the same way. But it's not in our zeitgeist.
Musical legacy intense. Hold on a second.
Oh
let's
my
not,
God! NSYNC's musical legacy is so
it has
intense
fans,
among millennials.
But let's not pretend like NSYNC is this.
There
revered...
are NSYNC fans. So what? There are NSYNC fans who will leave an NSYNC movie disappointed if you don't play Girlfriend. If you don't,
but you'd obviously play the music. Have you seen Dazed or Confused or Everybody Wants Some or any of these movies? I mean,
yeah.
You can play the music without having to put them in a position where they're on stage singing.
But
it.
I
that's
think,
not really
but
how
think,
biopics
but
work.
But I think in Dazed and Confused, you can play the music because it's about these characters' interactions with the music. When you do it in a biopic, I swear to God, watching Bohemian Rhapsody, it was just
but
like,
you're using the same, and now he's playing Another One Bites the Dust. But you're using
oh.
the same exact logic that is exactly what pisses me off about biopics now. That's not the structure of this.
But
it's not. You're using the logic that applies to other biopics for a biopic that does not apply the same logic as other biopics.
But what I'm saying is
it's very easy to put music into a movie
interested...
about NSYNC when you have 3 days to do it.
But
they have
the
interviews
vast...
they performed on GMA. I mean, you can take that to say that you can't put the music in the movie. That's the easiest part of this job.
I think you can put the music in the movie, but I think it's hard to put the music in the movie in a natural way. I think one of the big
struggles. This is not going to be Bohemian Rhapsody. You're taking the Josephine Baker approach. This is not a serious, hard-hitting movie. It's the exact opposite. It's this movie where it's about a leisurely stroll through 3 days of these. It's not about, it's a movie with humor. It's a movie directed by Adam McKay and written by Richard Linklater, who made School of Rock.
But now we have the no interruption, 2 minute, you know, increments of panic time where you could just, here's why this is the movie that you're pitching and why it works. And you have 2 minutes, no interruptions. And when
no
I call
counters.
Time at 2 minutes, that's time.
Bang.
No going over on those 2 minutes.
Okay.
Who's first?
Noah, you're going first. And
okay.
you're gonna give us that 2 minute, that brief, that elevator pitch whenever you're ready.
Josephine Baker is an incredible historical figure. She is incredibly relevant to the moment right now. And at the end of the day, yes, art can entertain. Yes, art can just be fun. But at the end of the day, art is at its best when it is challenging and reflecting upon society. Art is at its best when it holds a mirror to the current times. That's why we need a story of Josephine Baker. Right now, it is incredibly important to tell the story of the rise of fascism in Europe, to see what's happening around us in the streets as people are taking to the streets, as there is a giant culture war going on. It's important to acknowledge the heroes of the past. Josephine Baker is one of those heroes? And on a story level, how the hell can you not love a story about a jazz dancer who became a spy in World War II? Yes, it's important, but it's also so much fun. Everyone loves spy movies. You can have intrigue, you can have tension in the plot, you can resolve your tension with these cathartic, giant dance performances. This can be a really interesting, really compelling movie because we don't look at World War II through the lens of entertainment. We don't look at these things through the lens of a jazz singer and dancer. I think she's an incredible figure that is a really, really compelling story. I think it's a story that not enough people know about. She's, like we said, she doesn't have songs that are cultural touchstones, and that's a problem. And I think it's, above all else, I just think it's a really, really cool, really fun, really good story. I think you can make it heavy, but I also think there's lots of room for levity with... Time. Okay.
Awesome. I think you fit quite a good amount of stuff in there.
Oh, I didn't hear you all the time.
Very good use. So, again, 2 minutes on the clock. Tyler, pitch the bye-bye-bye movie. 2 minutes.
Yeah, so I took a much more fun approach. I mean, it in a way it pitches itself, right? The biopic standard that we're getting now is just it's boring. It's this that tries to stuff way too much in a way short of a time period. And there's way too much going on, and quite frankly, I think most movies that tackle some of the realer and much more important subjects are doing it a lot better without having to stuff in a music career or whatever we're seeing in a lot of these biopics, all of these other things, right? They're trying to be too many movies at once. And I think there are much better ways to tell stories of much realer and much more significant purpose than it is to stuff a bunch of music into something like that. And so that is why I chose it. I think first off, it's a movie that obviously people would love to watch. I mean, I would love to watch, but I think more importantly, there's such a clear distinction between just how we talk about the genesis of the internet era, and more importantly, how people existed, especially early in the internet era, as public figures, and what that means, and what it means to kind of disassemble the character of a group of people that were growing apart. And then most importantly, you can do some incredible stuff with music, which is kind of, you know, cut the cornerstone of a music biopic. And music that is culturally relevant, music that is interesting, and most importantly, you can have a lot of fun with it, which is something biopics all too often are failing to do, which is they're not having fun anymore. They're taking themselves far too seriously, and some of them are even failing at the messages that they want to kind of intimate to people. And this is an opportunity to kind of take the reins back and say this doesn't have to be this huge drama fest where all of these things are happening. We're looking at drug abuse and all this other stuff and bad things are happening, and it's more the ability to take back the music biopic for a moment and show that it can be something else. It doesn't have to be this kind of sententious almost at times preachy thing, which I think so many of these biopics are becoming. Did you call time, Jordan?
Yeah.
Yo, I nailed that shit. That was 2 minutes off the dot. I didn't even hear you call time again. That was amazing.
So, those are the both of panic times right there. Now, before we finish this off, I just want to say if you're on the Patreon, there will be a place where you can go and vote who you decide who had the better pitch, which movie would you rather see. It'll be right on there.
And, yeah, if you go to the Nerdstalgic Patreon, that'll be there. But now, we can't let you off the hook, Jordan. You have to pick. Can't let you off the hook.
Oh, no.
He can't let you off the hook. Every week, Jordan picks a winner. It doesn't matter, guys. He doesn't have a say in the vote. You guys decide who wins. You guys on the Patreon get the points. Every percentage count. Get your vote in. The points are basically operating on a percentage system. So 57% of the votes go to one person. They get 57 points and so on and so forth. So you guys are all that matters. But, you know, we like to involve Jordan in things, you know, because Jordan's amazing. So why wouldn't we involve Jordan? So, Jordan, two things. One, you have to pick your winner. And two, I just want to hear what's your third choice for a music biopic?
My third choice?
You've got two. I want a third one.
Okay. Who would I choose? Huh? I would do Ozzy Osbourne.
Yes,
Teen Years.
That would be amazing.
What got him into this music?
That would be amazing. An Ozzy Osbourne coming of age story.
and it's called Oddly Ozzy.
I love it. Yes. It's amazing.
And that was on the spot.
Yeah.
That was on the spot.
All right. So I do want to say
it'll be directed. Can we acknowledge that Ozzy Osbourne will be directed by Kenneth Branagh, the mastermind behind Artemis
and Kenneth Branagh will also stand in it. That
yeah.
Okay. I do want to say this. I would very much, in two different settings, love both of these films. I think that the Josephine Baker story, telling, you know, what she was doing at the time and how she was a spy and also singing and how that story would be told would be fascinating. And it would be very interesting to watch, and I think that could be a fantastic just told movie. And I'd really want to see that. On the other hand, I'm someone who loves nostalgia. I'm all about nostalgia. Like, I'm always here in the present, caring about what's in the present, but the stuff that made me, that I love, is also very important to me. And I love discussing it and looking back on it. And the thought of an NSYNC movie, especially one kind of done in the way of like the Steve Jobs movie, where it's a couple days,
yep,
that it's just, here's these important moments, sounds pretty interesting. Whether it is this nostalgia bait or slice of life, just moment, that sounds very interesting to me because these were key figures of my childhood. This was something that I was a part of. And I would like to see on screen. Like, I think it would resonate more as a biopic for me today, more than, like, even though I love Queen, Bohemian Rhapsody, like, all that stuff that happened was before my time. Even though I love Queen, before my time.
Yeah, Bohemian Rhapsody did exactly what Noah was talking about, which is it made it, in some ways, about this kind of... It made it more about the moment at times than it even did character, and it left so many people on the back burner in that story. Oh my God! But
also, it just straight up made up a lot of things.
It did, and it changed dates too. That last, so much was mixed around.
The also, last Queen never
the date
broke
of him
up.
Finding out and telling people about the AIDS was incorrect.
Oh my God!
But of course, if it serves your story better, change history. That's fine. who do you think you are, Quentin Tarantino? Only he gets to do that. Only he gets to change what happens. Anyway, I will say this: both would be fantastic, but honestly, to me, like, I'm in a time where I would love some NSYNC. Honestly, I would love to see that movie like ASAP. You have Timmy Shimmy right there, Timothy Charlemagne,
right? Oh my God!
I want to see him acting in this role. Not to say I don't want to ever see the Josephine Baker story.
Oh, I think that movie would be dope.
I do want to say, I want to live in a world where the same actor has depicted both Bob Dylan and Justin Timberlake.
what'd you say? No, I heard was Bob Dylan and Justin Timberlake.
Well, I said two-year Timothy Chalamet casting. Timothy Chalamet is in a Bob Dylan biopic in the works, and I love the idea of the same actor playing Justin Timberlake and Bob Dylan.
That would be so weird. Oh God, I love Timothy Chalamet so much. I think he's so phenomenal. Oh,
yeah, I couldn't come at you on that because I fucking love Timothy Chalamet too.
I fucking love Timothy Chalamet.
I was like, how dare he? How dare he use Chalamet against me?
And Austin Butler as Jason Chavez is just so perfect. I was looking at them side by side when he dyed his hair for the Elvis role, and I was like, oh my God, they're the same person. Like, holy shit. But. No, okay. Jordan's made his choice. I would want to see Josephine Baker. If I'm being totally honest, I think the Josephine Baker movie would be really dope by Sam Mendes. But if I'm being totally honest about the Josephine Baker movie, I think Janelle Monáe is probably the only person you could cast as Josephine Baker.
Oh my God!
I can't. Or maybe Lupita Nyong'o. But I think I'm just obsessed with Lupita Nyong'o right now. So I think maybe that's that. I'm obsessed with her right now.
Yeah, no. If we're being completely honest here, I loved your pitch too. It was fantastic.
I know. The point of the movie is the point of the show is the debate, right? Yeah. So we can't give it in. No, I think I'm obsessed with Lupita Nyong'o. I think that's what I want to get out of my mouth right now. I think I love Lupita Nyong'o. Anyways, let's do a couple pieces of housekeeping real quick. First off, if you don't know who Noah is, if you're coming here from me and you're just being introduced, if you're your audience, if you're coming from Noah, you can just ignore this because you already know this. But I talk about this a lot. I think what Noah's doing on YouTube, if you don't know, he goes by Polyphonic on YouTube. He talked about it a little bit, but I don't think he quite gave himself the elevator pitch he deserves because that would be arrogant. But if you're interested at all in in music, but more importantly, I think if you're interested at all in learning something, I think, and we talk about it, me and Jordan, all the time, but there's so little opportunity, I think, to kind of, I don't know, expand yourself or learn something, walk away with more information that isn't kind of thrown at you and is given to you in a way that's really digestible, but also challenging. I think you should watch some Polyphonic. If you're a nostalgic fan, I think you this is right up your alley. And I think more importantly, something that he's doing is he's getting to the point where I am, where he's just talking about, or he's already there. I'm getting there, where he's just talking about whatever he wants, really. It's the variety of content over there on that channel is astounding. Not astounding in the sense of
you're making me blush.
Yeah, not astounding in the sense of like its output in numbers, but astounding in the sense of how well rounded it really is, and just how much it covers, and how much intrigue there is for literally. I would be shocked if you went over there and didn't find a video for you. So go check out Polyphonic. I think he's at Polyphonic on Twitter. Is that right?
Yep. At Watch Polyphonic. Yep. Sorry.
At Watch Polyphonic on Twitter. Jordan, I don't think we can say anything yet, so we won't. But Jordan's working on some really cool stuff that he's really excited about.
Probably next time we'll talk about it.
Yeah, next episode of Film Panic, when we get to the old housekeeping, we'll talk about it. But he's working on some really cool stuff. He's at Jordan Fringe
94.
At Jordan Fringe. I'm going to get it one day. At Jordan Fringe 94 on Twitter. If you're here, I probably don't need to tell you what I do, but I make videos on the internet about stuff. I think my video about us, Jordan Peele's Us, is out today if you're on the Patreon. If you're listening to this later, it's already definitely out. So, yeah, that's where you can find me. Again, really quickly, follow at @film_panic on Twitter. We'd love to find out what you guys want to hear. You can also mention it on the Patreon. And also at @nostalgicyt on Twitter. Polyphonic, Noah, anything you got coming up that you want to tell people about, or are you good?
Well, I just joined this cool podcast called Film Panic. No, that's I think I'm good for now. Yeah, just check me out on Twitter. Shout me out if you like my stuff. Yeah, other than that, I'm pretty good.
Jordan, just check in with Jordan on Twitter over the next few days if you're really curious about what the secretive project he's working on.
I'm curious. I'm curious now.
You know
I
is.
I hope you like the color green.
there's your hint. So yeah, I think that's it for us, and we'll see you guys next time.
Yeah, bye-bye. Thanks for tuning in.